We're holding on. Ein Zion Umud Beis, 14 lines from the bottom. Line begins Chalukai. We talked about yesterday about the dinim of walking through water on Yom Kippur, where even though, of course, you're not allowed to wash yourself on Yom Kippur, but there are various reasons why you're allowed to walk through water. And the Gemara had said, even up to your neck, for certain important purposes, for example, to greet your Rebbe or your father or somebody greater than you, to go to a shir. We talked about also to for a person to watch his produce. And in some cases, the person, we said, is even allowed to return. So now, though, the Gemara is going to ask, this that we're saying, that you're allowed to walk through the water up to your neck, never mind the dinim of Yom Kippur, what about the danger involved? So the Gemara asks, Mask for Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef asks, forget about Yom Kippur. Even on weekdays, would you actually be allowed to go through water that's all the way up to your neck? You have as follows. In Sefer Yechezkel, the next to last perek, describes a fountain, a stream of water that's going to issue out from under the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the third Beis HaMikdash, and then is going to become larger and larger, and eventually it's going to flow into the various salty bodies of water and make them into sweet water so that people will be able to drink, and so forth. It means begashmius, it means also beruchnius, that the shefa, the outflow of kedusha that comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim will have a positive effect onto the whole world and transform it for the better. Anyway, so Yechezkel gives the most detailed description of it. There are various other Nevi'im that talk about it more briefly. We're going to quote a couple of psukim from them in the course of this discussion. And then there are others that are not going to be mentioned here in the Gemara, but there are other Nevi'im that mention this concept as well. Yoel, for example, mentions, a fountain will come out from the house of Hashem and water the valley of the Shittim, which is the valley where at the end of last week's parasha, where the Jewish people worshipped Baal Peor and got involved with the girls from Midian and Moab. That pasuk Umayun Beis Hashem Yetze is the basis of the Rebbe Rashab's Kuntras Umayun, where he explains the idea is that fountain is meant to clean up the Averis that they did there, where they got too much into their physical tivus, and Kuntras Umayun is all about how a person can work on overcoming those nowadays. Anyway, the point is, again, Yechezkel gives the most detailed description, and V'hoksiv, he says, V'yomod Elof Ba'amah, The Navi describes the Malach, who was his guide, measured 1,000 amos length of the stream, and he made me pass through the water, where at that point it was only Mei of Soyim, which means water up to the ankles. So we can, from here we learn, that when you have a stream of water and it goes only up to your ankles, you're allowed to cross it. Because that shallow, it's obviously not going to be, even if it's a fast current, as the Gemara is going to go on to say later, it's obviously not going to sweep you away, and therefore you're allowed to, and it's not dangerous. Next, the pasuk continues, Vayomar Elef Bayavirenim Bamayim Mayim Birkoyim. Then he measured another 1,000 amos length of the river, and now it's getting bigger and bigger. So now the water is all the way down, is all the way up to my knees. And again, Yechezkel describes, Vayavireni, he made me pass through, Mikansha Mutter, Lavar Ad Birkayim. From here we learn that you're allowed to pass through water up to your knees. Again, there's no danger in it. Next, Vayomon Elef, the Yechezkel continues, the Malach measured another 1,000 amos length of the river. Vayavireni Mei Mosnoyim, he made me pass through the water where it was up to my waist. So from here we learn that you're allowed to still go through water that's up to your waist. Even if it's a rushing current, there's no problem. There's no problem with that. But if it's any deeper than that, as the pasuk continues, by Yomod Elef, he measured another 1,000 amos, and it became Nachal Asher Lo Uchal Laver. It became a stream that I could not cross. So that means, so not just I could not, as he physically couldn't, but hello. Not just I physically couldn't, but in other words, that he's saying that I wasn't allowed to, because it would be dangerous to try to cross at that point because it's above his waist, and therefore there's a good chance that so the Gemara at this point doesn't realize actually why Ein Zayin Amud Beis, about 10 lines from the bottom. The Gemara at this point doesn't realize that there's a difference between a body of water that has a current and not. The Gemara assumes that even if it's a gentle current, such as this stream probably has, then once it's above the waist, then you're not allowed to walk through it. So what are you telling me then, that you're allowed to walk through water all the way up to your neck for these various purposes on Yom Kippur? Forget about Yom Kippur. There's a physical danger in it. The current, the water, you might drown. The answer is, Omer Abaye, shiny nachal deredifi maya. So Abaye says it's different with the stream because it has a very fast current, a very fast flowing current. From the words of Rashi, where he says "Ayotzim beis kodesh hakodashim," that at this particular stream, it sounds like Rashi holds that this din applies only to that particular stream, which would mean that it's not negeya nowadays because you don't have that stream yet. Only la'asid lava, when that stream comes into existence, then you're going to have that din that once it gets above, that once it's deep enough to be beyond the waist, then you're not allowed to cross through it. On the other hand, most Mefarshim learn that it doesn't just mean that particular stream. It means in general, any stream that has a fast current, then you're not allowed to cross through it as if it's above your waist because of the danger. If it's so when we were talking about before, about being allowed to cross through water all the way up to your neck, it's talking about a stream, a river, whatever, that has a gentle current, or even a pond or some a pond or a lake which has no current at all. So there's no problem of being swept away. So then you're able to walk through there even up to your neck. Okay, since we're talking about that stream from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so the Gemara expands on it a little bit. Yocho Yavirenu B'Sichui, you would think you might not be able to cross it on foot, but maybe you'd be able to swim across it. Note, Talmud Lema, therefore, Yechezkel continues in his description, Ki Go Hamayim, the reason I couldn't cross is because the water had swelled up so much. Ne Sochu, it's water of Sochu, meaning water that's deep enough to swim in. And my may sahu shiyuta. The word sahu means swimming. Shaken koren la shiyuta sayocha. Because in Aramaic, swimming is called sayocha. Yeah, but actually not just in Aramaic, in Lashon Kodesh as well. You have, for example, a pasuk, kashi faras asoicha lischais. Like the way a person puts out his arms, sticks out his arms when he's swimming. So the point is, the pasuk is telling us that it's so deep you can't swim through it either. Again, are we talking specifically about this river, or are we talking about in general any river like that where you shouldn't try to swim across it when it has a fast current because it might be dangerous? Continues the Braise. So Yocho Yavirenu Babuniktana, you would think that you might be able to cross this river in a little boat. Note, Talmud Lema, then you have a pasuk from Yeshaya. Now again, Yeshaya doesn't give this detailed description, but he gives a much briefer description of the river. And he says, Bal Telech by Oni Shayet, a boat that goes with the wind. Shayet again means to swim. So it means a boat that's paddled with oars, rather, not with sails, a boat that's paddled with oars will not be able to go in. Again, because the current is so fast. Yocha Yavirenu Babunigdola. So you would think maybe you're going to be able to cross it in a large ship. Note, Talmud Lema, Yeshaya continues, with Tzi Adir Lo Yavrenu. Even a mighty fleet, will not be able to cross it. So my mashma, where do we see from that anything about a big boat? So could it be Targum Yosef? As Reb Yosef teaches the pasuk, it's in Targum Yonason on the pasuk. Reb Yonason was an expert. It's brought in various places. Reb Yonason was an expert on the Targum on account of, since he was blind, he couldn't learn Torah Shabbat, so therefore he specialized in the Targum, which is part of Torah Shabbat. So he quoted the Targum. He quoted Targum Yonason on the pasuk that says, "Like Sezel Bob Sfinas Tzai Bay Sfinas Tzayodin, you won't be able to cross this river in a fisherman's boat. Buni Rabba Loi Tuguzena, and even a large buni, which is a large ship, will not be able to cross it." So in other words, again, the point is the stream that's coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is so fast flowing that even a big ship is not going to be able to cross it. And therefore, certainly a person shouldn't try to cross it on foot once it reaches that point where it's so deep. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi says, even the Malach HaMavis is not going to have permission to cross that stream. Again, when we're talking about the stream comes forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so it represents a tremendously high level of Kedusha that's going to flow out to the whole world, so that's going to counteract even the Malach HaMavis. Why? Here we're saying that a boat that's propelled by oars is not going to be able to cross it, but the point is we're using the word shayit. Uchtivasam, you have an expression in connection with the Satan, which the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, who Satan, who Yetzahara, who Malach HaMavis. He has all three roles, and he says on himself, Mishut Baaretz, that I've been going and floating around and circulating around the land. So the same word, Shut and Shayit, it's the same Shurdish, means, in other words, therefore, when the Pasuk is saying that an Oni Shayit, that a boat of Shayit will not be able to pass this stream, it means also the Malach HaMavis. In fact, also, Meforshim explained, the word Oni fits with that also. Why we're saying specifically the Malach HaMavis, the word Oni can also be related to the word Aninus, which means mourning. So it means, in other words, the Malach HaMavis, who causes mourning, will not be able to cross this river. Okay. More about this river. How does it start out? This stream that's going to come forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, originally, when it's coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's as small and as narrow as the antennas of locusts. Very, very narrow. Then when it reaches the doorway of the Hechel, which is 40 amas away, then it's a little bit thicker. Now it's the thickness of a thread of shesi. When you set up a loom to weave, you have the shesi threads, which are the ones that are wound around the rolls and then kept in place, and those are the ones that you raise and lower. And then you have the Erev thread, which passes back and forth between them. The Erev thread is thicker than the shesi thread because you don't want it to snap while you're doing it, so therefore you make it a little thicker. So kivin shigia la'ulam, then when it reaches the ulam, which is a little further, nasik achot shel erev, now it's a little thicker, it becomes the thickness of a thread of erev. Kivin shigia pesach azara, when it reaches the entrance of the azara, nasik pi pach katan, then it becomes wider, now it becomes like the opening of a small jug. There are in certain purposes in halacha in Hilchos Mikvos, we say that there's a type of jug where the opening of it Kshefaras Hanoid is the size of two fingers, the size of your index finger and your middle finger, able to rotate freely in the hole. So the pashtos, maybe the Gemara means the same size over here, but anyway, so it becomes the size of a pach behind the tznan. Thus, we learn the Mishnah in Midas, appropriate now for the 3 weeks when we're learning that. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer. Now, the Mishnah describes over there the gates on the various sides of the Azara. One of the gates on the south side is called Shar HaMayim. And why is it called Shar HaMayim? So first the Mishnah says over there, because they brought through it the water from Nisuch HaMayim. But Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov gives a different reason. Mayim Mefakin, water that trickles forth. So Mefakin, same Shurdish as Pach, meaning again, as we said, a flask, a jug of water, in the future are going to be trickling through that gate or near that gate from under the threshold of the Heichel. So in other words, as we said, it's coming from the Heichel, it's coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it's getting wider and wider, and by the time it reaches this gate or near this gate, then it's the width of a pach, and therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov uses the expression and it mefakin, which same shurish. Continues the Braisa, or continues your Pinchas rather. Mikan ve'elach, further than that, hoya misgabe ve'oila, the water becomes mightier and mightier, because the current starts going faster and faster, and the water starts getting deeper and deeper, as we had before in Yechezkel's description. Ad shemagia lepesach beis David, until it reaches the entrance of David's palace, which is down in the city of Yerushalayim. The Gemara, by the way, in the Yerushalmi and Shkolim brings this whole discussion as well. So we had learned it a few months ago in this shir. The point is the Gemara and the Mefarshim explain over there that because the Nevi'im describe, for example, the Chaya describes, Yechezkel describes that the Har HaBayis is going to be a very, very high mountain, Lasid Lavoi. In our times, the Har HaBayis is relatively low. It's and in fact there are parts of Yerushalayim that are at higher elevation than it. But Lasid Lavoi, it's going to be raised up and become a tremendously tall mountain. So therefore, a stream that's flowing off it is going to have a very fast current because of the slope. So it's becoming stronger and stronger, and then it reaches the entrance of David's house. Kivin shemagia lePesach beis David. Once it reaches that point, nasa kenachal shoytif. Then it becomes like a rushing stream. Shaboy reichtin zavin vezavas nidus v'yoldus. At that point, it's deep enough that Zovim and Zovis and Nidus and women who gave birth will be able to toivel in it. In other words, up until that point, it's too shallow to toivel in, as we're going to explain in a second. Now they're able to. And the Rishalmi actually says that beyond that point, anyway, they're also not going to be able to tovel in it, because in particular, a Zav needs to tovel in Mayim Chayim, in spring, in living spring water, without any rain mixed into it. Once you reach beyond Pesach Beis David, then already you have. The reason why it's getting bigger and bigger is because it's getting mixed in with rainwater that that rolls in off the slopes. And rainwater is possible for a Zav to tovel, and it's kosher for all the other three, but it's possible for them. Shenemah, as you have a pasuk in Zechariah, who also describes this river, and he says, "By Yomahu, on that day when Mashiach comes, Yiyam Mokar Niftach LeBeis David Al Yeshvi Yerushalayim, there will be a fountain opened up for the house of David and for the residents of Yerushalayim, LeChatas Ul Nida, for Chatas, meaning for Paradum water and for Nida." So therefore, so we see that Nidos and other such people can use it to tovel in. Now, what about, we said before, it's such a fast stream that you're not able to cross it physically. So there's a couple of explanations. One of them being that maybe what you do is you tovel near the edges of it, where the current is not quite as fast. Or another possibility is maybe you do, like the Gemara explains in some places, that Shmuel would do for his daughters, that you set up a partition in there. You put up some mats or something in the water to make a partition, and then you tovel in that. The point is, though, that it's pure water. It's spring water, and therefore, up to that point, even a Zav can tovel in, but beyond that, not. Now, this that we're saying, that the Yoshve Yerushalayim, and we're saying the Nida, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Mikan Remez, the Nida, from here we have a hint about a Nida, that, and we're saying it's not suitable for a Nida to tovel in until it becomes a fast-flowing stream. That goes to show that when a Nida tovels, the water needs to be deep. She has to be able to sit in the water with the water going up to her neck. Meaning, in other words, the water has to be deep. Now, Rashi says it doesn't say anything in the pasuk about the neck, but since the pasuk is saying that it has to be deep, so therefore the Chachamim figured out if it's deep enough to go to her neck when she's sitting, then it means that when she's standing and bends over, then it'll be deep enough for her to tovel in. However, the Gemara says, "V'les hilchsak abasei," the halacha is not like him. The halacha is, in fact, that a nida is able to tovel in shallower water as long as it actually covers her whole body. L'chatchila, most of the poskim say that she should stand and then bend over. In fact, actually, on the side of it here, it brings that Rabbeinu Tam understands that when it says over here, leishev, it doesn't literally mean she needs to be able to sit. It means that she stands, actually. So she stands and bends over. And the poskim say, based on that, the water level should be at least a zeres, which is 3 tefachim, above her navel, above her belly button. That way, it's deep enough that when she bends over, then all of her body will be covered, and there won't be creases in too many places. The problem is, if you bend over too much, then it forms creases in the body, and then water doesn't get into them properly. But like this, in that posture, it'll be fine. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe held that the best way to tovel is laying down, and that's how they do in many mikvahs nowadays. Is they have the woman lies down and tovel lies down straight out, and that way also there's very few creases and things in the body and places where the water can't reach.
What's the halacha for a zav?
For a zav, the halacha is yes, to tovel in mayim chayim. There are Rishonim who hold that the same thing is true as of a Zava. However, the mainstream accepted halacha is not like that, which is why nowadays, even though we have a suffix, anytime a woman bleeds, technically you have a suffix whether she's a Nida or a Zava, which is why we keep the dinim of Zava and make her sit Shiva Nikiyim. Nevertheless, most poskim hold that she's not required to tovel in Mayim Chaim. She can tovel in a regular mikvah. Only a Zav, everybody agrees, has to tovel in Mayim Chayim. But nowadays, I don't know if we have Zavim anyway. And even if we do, we're not able to keep the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara anyway. And we don't have a Bais HaMikdash. We don't have Kodshim. So therefore, it's not really Negei Halacha L'maisa.
So Mayim Chayim, how do you define that?
Mayim Chaim would be water directly from a spring without any other water mixed into it. A good example would be the Arizal's mikvah, which is fed by a spring, and then right there you go in Tovel, right there, they have a hollowed out basin in the rock right near the spring, and the water flows from the spring directly into it.
Regardless of amount?
Yeah, well, it has to be 40 sa, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so that was all a side thing. That was all we got into that. We got into discussing that river from the Kodesh to Kedoshim because we were talking about the question, how can you walk through water up to your neck? Wouldn't it be dangerous? And the answer is essentially that only when there's a fast current is there a problem, not otherwise. So now getting back to our main point, which is we started talking about walking through water on Yom Kippur, and we discussed the various cases where it's allowed. So the question is, Tenach Yemekapurim Deleka Minol. So that works well enough on Yom Kippur, where you're not wearing shoes. So therefore, there's no problem that while you're walking through the water, your shoes might fall off. Shabbos to Ikka Minomai. What about what would the din be? On Shabbos, where you're allowed to wear shoes, would you be allowed to cross the water on Shabbos wearing shoes? Is there a problem that they might fall off and you might carry them? The words Tenach Yemek Kippurim Deleka Minol are in parenthesis over here, and in fact, Rashi is not Gerdes it. And then Mefarshim explained, because Rashi would understand that we're not even necessarily talking about such deep water as we were talking about before in connection with Yom Kippur. There, the problem is, again, that you're not allowed to bathe on Yom Kippur. Here, we're talking about just the point is, we could be talking about a much shallower pool or stream or whatever. The problem is not getting wet. The problem is that your shoes may fall off, and then you're going to carry them, and you're going to be carrying them in a Shusar Abin. So what would be the din then? In law of the Nasi of the Reish Galusa answered, Anocha Zise Rab Ami Rab Asi. I saw Rab Ami and Rab Asi de Motu Urkama de Maya. They one time were walking on Shabbos and they reached a small stream or a puddle or something. Vavrua derech malbush, and they walked through it with their shoes the normal way. So we see that you're allowed to. So the Gemara asked Tenach Minol. Fine, that explains what, as far as regular shoes, then obviously the answer is you're allowed to. Sandal my ikalamemer. What about, are you allowed to do the same thing with sandals, which are made out of harder leather and you can't attach them, you can't tie them that tightly onto your feet? Is there a concern that they might fall off and you're going to carry them? So the answer is Amr Rechumi. Ano chazisi l'Ravina, d'avar derech malbush. Rabbi Rechumi says, I saw Ravina walking through a puddle or a small stream like that on Shabbos with his sandals. Sandal in the Gemara is not necessarily the same as sandals that we have nowadays, but the point is they were made out of hard leather and they were attached to the foot. They were tied around the foot in such a way, but the point is, as we're saying over here, you couldn't necessarily attach them that tight.
You're supposed not to use leather, no?
No, we're talking about on Shabbos. That's why we're talking about on Shabbos. On Yom Kippur, that's what we're saying. On Yom Kippur, you can't wear leather shoes, so there's no problem. The question is, you're going barefoot, so therefore there's no problem. The question is on Shabbos, so now we're saying with shoes, yes, we see Rav Ami and Rav Asi did that. And with sandals also, yes, we see that Ravina did that. Based on a Gemara and Bava Basra, though, it seems, at least the way that Ashbam explains it over there, that sandals are actually, again, not necessarily the same as sandals nowadays. He describes that sandals are the kind of footwear that you would wear in the winter in those times. Now, that can't mean necessarily that they're open like our sandals, otherwise it would be too cold to wear them. But the point is they're made out of hard leather, and therefore they wouldn't get ruined by the mud on the roads. So according to him, it comes out that a sandal is fairly similar to a shoe. It's just made out of much harder leather, whereas a minol is made out of soft leather. Anyway, so according to this, it comes out that it would be mutter. Rabbeinu Al-Yakim, by the way, has a whole different explanation of the question. He says the question is, can you take off your shoes, given that you're afraid that they're going to fall off in the water, and wear them, and you're afraid they're going to get wet, and wear them as if they were gloves? So with shoes, we're saying yes, and with sandals, we're saying that Rabbeinu did that. On the other hand, Rav Ashi, I'm a sandal hatchila loy. Rav Ashi says, no, you can't hatchila go out on Shabbos where you know you're going to be crossing the water wearing sandals, because there's more of a concern that they may fall off. So if you walked out, not realizing that you're going to be crossing water, or you left before Shabbos and you didn't, and you were still, you came to that point on Shabbos, then yes, you're allowed to cross it in your sandals, but not to hatchila go out with that intention. The Rogachover has a letter in the back of Ketzer Sachoshin that he wrote to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, where he gives a different explanation of the sandal hatchilaloi. He says it means on Shabbos you would not be allowed to put on sandals in the first place for the purpose only of protecting your feet while you're walking through the water, because then it's not really considered a normal way of wearing them. As opposed to if you put them on because you're normally going to wear them, and then you're walking through water, then it would be fine. But Latchila, Rav Ashi is saying to put them on only for the purpose of walking with them through the water, so you don't get so you don't hurt your feet. Then not. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Reish Galusa ikla leHagrunya. One time the Reish Galusa visited the city of Hagrunya, Leveir of Nosan, and he was visiting in Hagrunya, which is the name of a place. He stayed over there for Shabbos. He was staying in the house of Reb Nosan. So Raf So Raphram, who was the local Rav, and all the other Chachamim of the Yeshiva, all came to the Pirka, to the Drosha, that the Reish Galusa was going to be given. Ravina loy osa, but Ravina did not come. So now, is the Reish Galusa going to be angry at Ravina? Why he didn't show up and show honor to him? So the next day, on Shabbos morning, Raphram wanted to get it out of the mind of the Reish Galusa, anything against Ravina. In other words, he wanted to show the Reish Galusa that Ravina had a valid reason for not coming. So Omale, so he asks him in the presence of the Reish Galusa, he asks him, "My time, I also my lapirka, Rebbe Ravina, why did you not come to the Reish Galusa's drasha yesterday?" Omale, so Ravina says, "Have a koyv like karoy. My foot was hurting." So Raphram asks him, "Okay, so you don't have to go barefoot. You could have worn shoes and then come. That would help with your foot pain." So he answers him, "Gaba de karahava. The problem was the injury was on the top of my foot. So putting on a shoe would aggravate that." So he says, "Iboy lach lemirma sandala." Okay, then instead you could have put on a sandal, which is wide. Rashi says it's wider, so therefore it's less likely to irritate your foot. Another possibility, I think Rabbeinu Yochim says, is it's more open on top, so therefore it's not going to irritate your foot. So Ravina tells him, because there's a stream on the way that I'd have to cross, and I couldn't cross that in sandals. So he asked him, "Iboy lach lemebre derech malbush." So you could have walked across it wearing the sandals. So Ravina tells him, "Loi saval amar lahodir amar Rav Ashi sandal hatchila loi." Don't you agree with what Rav Ashi said that hatchila you shouldn't be wearing a sandal to cross the water, because as Rashi had said, it may fall off for the various other reasons. So therefore, in other words, so Raphram deliberately asked Ravina this in the presence of the Reish Galusa, so that Ravina would eventually explain why he didn't come, and then the Reish Galusa would realize that Ravina was not doing it out of disrespect for him. He was just doing it because he couldn't come because of issues in halacha, because his foot was hurting and there would be an issue with him in halacha wearing a sandal and crossing the river. Now, didn't we just say before that Ravina says it's allowed, and in fact that Ruchumi said that Ravina actually did it? So Tosfos Yeshanim mentions two possibilities. One is that there were two Ravinas, and it seems historically that there were. There was a Ravina who was a Chava of Rav Ashi, and then there was another Ravina who was a Talmud of Rav Ashi, and he's the one, we say, when he passed away, then the period of the Gemara was over, the period of the Amoraim was over. So then according to that, it could be there were two different Ravinas over here. One asked it, and the other one was master it. The other possibility that Tosfos Yeshanim says is Ravina was just using it as an excuse. Really, he didn't come for some other reason. Maybe because he didn't want to hear the Reish Galusa's drasha or whatever, but he realized that would be an insult to the Reish Galusa, and you can't do that, and therefore he came up with this excuse. But really, la halacha, he would hold that you would be allowed to cross the water wearing sandals. In any case, the halacha is actually like Rav Ashi, that sandal hatchila loy, that you're not allowed to go and cross. You're not allowed to go out on Shabbos and cross and then cross a stream or a river or whatever wearing sandals, because they may fall off. But again, if you went out with them already, then you're allowed to continue wearing them and even go across. Okay. Going back now to dinim about bathing or washing yourself on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, "Toni Rabbi Yehuda bar Groigers, also leishav agabatina b'yom kippurim." It's also on Yom Kippur to sit on wet mud, because then moisture comes out of it, and then it comes out that you're washing yourself. So Rashi says not really washing. He says it's oneg korev l'rechitza. It's an enjoyment that's almost like washing, and therefore it would be also. Abaya says it doesn't just mean any kind of wet mud, though. It means specifically only if it's tefeach hamanas lapiach, meaning it's so wet that if you touch it with one hand, then you'd be able to transfer. There's enough wetness that you'd be able to transfer the wetness to something else. Then it's considered so wet that you're not allowed to sit on it on Yom Kippur. If it's less wet than that, then you're allowed to. Similarly, Omer of Yehuda, mutulet stan and repair. So Yehuda says you're allowed to cool off on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to wash yourself, but you're allowed to cool off, for example, by taking peiros and putting them on your forehead or something. The peiros, let's say, are cold. Imagine, let's say, you take them out of the fridge. Okay, they didn't have fridges in those times, but whatever. The point is, the peiros could conceivably be cooler than your body, and therefore you put them someplace. You put them on your head or someplace else, and you feel cooler. So the Gemara gives some examples. Rabbi Yehuda mitzanin bekora. Rabbi Yehuda would cool himself off by using a pumpkin. He would take the pumpkin and put it on his hand or his heads or whatever. Rabba Mitstanin Biyanukka, Rabba or Rava, Agoy Sabach changes it to, would cool himself off using a baby, which whose skin is cooler and moister, and therefore that would make him feel better. There are a few other explanations among Rishonim and Achronim what Yanukka means. One of them is the Rabbi Yitzchok ibn Gaius brings an explanation that a Yanukka is a kind of container for liquids that has a straw attached to it. So Yanukka, it's called that because like you suck out from it like a baby sucks, like a baby nurses. So in other words, the idea is he would use such a keli and cool himself off with it. And the Rashash suggests that maybe Yanukka means a young branch of a tree. Anyway, another one, Rava or Rabba, Mitstanin, because of the Kasper, he would cool himself off using a silver cup, where again, the silver is cooler and therefore he'd apply it to his head or whatever and feel better. On the other hand, Omer HaPapa, Kasa de Kasper, it's not so simple with a silver cup. Molei also, if it's full of liquid, then it's also. Choser Shari, but if it's missing some of the liquid, then it's mutter. Because if it's full to the brim, then when you're trying to cool yourself off with it, then some of the water may spill out, and then it comes out that you're washing yourself on Yom Kippur. But if it's, let's say, only half full, then it would be mutter. That's according to some Rishonim. Other Rishonim learn that choser would actually mean if it's empty. So according to them, if it has any liquid in it, it would be aser, because the liquid might spill out. Only if it's empty would it be mutter. And that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch Lahalom. Actually, we're going to have that in a second now in the Gemara. Depachra, on the other hand, that was if it's a silver cup. On the other hand, if it's an earthenware cup, Ivy, but Ivy also, either way, it would be also Mishum de Mishchal Shochil, because the water leaks through the sides of it. We know, for example, in the halachas of kashrus, that an earthenware keli can never be kashered because the liquid that's inside the keli penetrates through the walls of it, and then you can never completely get it out. So the same thing over here. Some of the liquid penetrates and then goes through the walls of the container, and therefore, if you have any liquid in there and you apply it to your skin, then it comes out that you're having the liquid from the inside coming on your skin, and you can't do that on your kippur because you can't wash. Rapapa, Omar, on the other hand, Rapapa says, different gears over here that Rav Ashi says, Kosa de Kaspa Chosa Nami Oster, even if the silver cup is not completely full, even if it's only partly full, it's also Mishum de Mizdiriv, because you might drop it. It might slip out of your hand, and then the water is going to splash on, and then the water is going to splash on you. So that is how it's brought La Locha. You're allowed to use an empty silver cup or most other materials. You're not allowed to use one that has some liquid in it, because as we're saying over here, it might splash, it might spit, you might drop it, and it'll splash on you. With an earthenware keli, actually, you have a machloikas aposkim, whether it's also, even if it's empty, or whether it's also like other ones, only if it has some liquid in it. In other words, do we say the fact that before it had liquid in it, that liquid is still absorbed in the walls of it, and now when you put it against your skin, then that water is going to exude out, therefore it should be also, or do we say only if there's water inside it right now, is there a problem? Okay. More on this topic of how you cool yourself off on Yom Kippur, the Gemara tells Zeira bar Choma Ushpizichnin de Rab Ami v'Rab Asi v'Rab Yishob ben Levi u'dekul Rabban de Kesari Haver. Zeira bar Choma, that was his name. He was a balabos in the city of Kesari, Caesarea. He was the host of Rab Ami and Rab Asi and Rab Yishob ben Levi and all the other Chachamim of Kesari. So whenever the Chachamim would come over there to the Beis Medrash, then he would host them. Amar Leila Rabbi Yosef Breda Rabbi Shurban Levi. So he tells Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Shurban Levi. So he had, in other words, he being the host, he had a lot of opportunities to observe up close what Rabbi Shurban Levi and the other Chachamim are doing as Halacha L'maisa. So one time, so he says to Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Shurban Levi, he says, Bar Aryeh, son of a lion, in other words, you who are the son of a great, tremendous Talmud Chacham like Rabbi Shurban Levi, Ta Emelach Milsa Malyasa Dahaba Ovid Avur. Let me tell you a great thing that your father used to do. Mitpachas hoisaloi, he had a handkerchief. So be Erev Yom Kippur, so on Erev Yom Kippur, b'shoda oisav amayim, on Erev Yom Kippur, he would soak it in water. V'oisa oisa kamin kelim neguvim, he would then squeeze out most of the water on it. He would squeeze out most of the water from it, so that so that it becomes like kelim neguv. It means like almost dry, but not completely dry. There's still a little moisture in it yet. Ulamacham a kanech b'pon of yadav v'raglav, and the next day on Yom Kippur he would wipe his face and hands and feet with it, and that way, since it's almost dry, then there's no issue of rechitza, and there's no problem of schita either, because he's not going to squeeze it out because it's almost dry. There's almost nothing to squeeze out of it. Therefore he would do that. And similarly, Erev Tisha B'Av showed a Osama Mayim. Similarly, on Erev Tisha B'Av, he would soak the handkerchief in water. Olamacham Avira Gabe Einav, and the next day on Tisha B'Av morning, he would put it on it. We put it past it over his eyes to get off the sleep that a person has on their eyes in the morning. So now Rashi brings a different girsa, which is that actually what he would do is he would not soak it in water on Erev Yom Kippur or on Erev Tisha B'Av. What he would actually do is he would just wipe his hands with it on Erev Yom Kippur, and then the next day, now it's still a little bit damp from the fact that he wiped his hands on it yesterday, and now he would use it to wipe on his face and his hands and his feet. Many of the other Rishonim agree with that girsa, with that second girsa that Rashi brings, and in fact, that's how the halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to do like what it says on the surface of the Gemara over here, to wet it before Yom Kippur and then mostly dry it out, and then use it to apply to your face and hands and feet on Yom Kippur. Not so much because of washing, but because you may squeeze it out. On the other hand, what you do is you can do like what Rashi says over here. You can wipe your hands with it out of Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur, then in the morning, it's still a little damp, and then you can use it. Because that's not wet, that's not damp enough to be tefeach hamanas la'piach, and that's not damp enough that there's going to be any concern with squeezing it out. So the Gemara continues. V'chein ki osera Rabba Barab Mori Yomar. Similarly, when Rabba Barab Mori came from Eretz Yisrael, he said fairly similar. Erev Tisha B'Av, they would bring Rabbi Shur ben Levi a handkerchief. He would soak it in water. He would put it under his pillow, and that way it dries out there overnight. The next day he would wipe his face and hands and feet with it. On Erev Yom Kippur, they would bring him a handkerchief. He would soak it in water. He would make it like it's almost dry. And the next day, he would pass it over his eyes. So similar to the previous report of what Ze'iri Bachoma said. Again, the actual halacha, according to most poskim, is based on a different girsa of the Gemara. So what it is on Tisha B'Av, it's fine to do that. Because on Tisha B'Av, there's no issue of schita. So therefore, so you can do that. You're allowed to have a sort of wet handkerchief or towel or whatever, and wipe your face and then so forth with it. But on Yom Kippur, where you have the issue of schita, there you can't. The only thing you can do is that you wipe your hands with it before Yom Kippur, and then it's still wet on Yom Kippur. It's still wet from your wiping your hands, and then you're able to use that on Yom Kippur. Okay. You actually told us the other way around, that you told us that on Tisha B'Av he would make sure that it was almost dry, but on Erev Yom Kippur not. And we Talmidim pointed out to you that's a problem, because how can you do schita on Yom Kippur? So it must necessarily be like the first version, that with Yom Kippur he would have it almost dry, and with Tisha B'Av and with Tisha B'Av not. Or again, according to Rashi's second girsa, what it is you were telling us that on Erev Tisha B'Av he would wipe his hands with it, and the next day he would wash it. He would wipe his face with it. Whereas Erev Yom Kippur he would soak it in water and then start drying it out. And we said that. What do you mean? Then you have the problem of schita. Why would Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Tachlifa have told it to them the other way around? Why would he say that there's more of a chumrah with Tisha B'Av than with Yom Kippur? So Tosfos Yeshanim says, because Tisha B'Av is midrabanan. Things that are banan sometimes mean to strengthen more than things min haTorah. So therefore, there might be more reason to be machmer. He held there might be more reason to be machmer Tisha B'Av rather than Yom Kippur. A couple of other mefoshim give other possible reasons why to be more machmer. One of them is one interesting one. The Netziv says, we did discuss a few days ago the concept of whether the other inuyim of Yom Kippur are derabbanan or derais. We said there are opinions of Rishonim that all the other ones, except for eating and drinking and malacha, are derabbanan. On the other hand, Tisha B'Av is midivrei kabbalah. The concept of afflicting ourselves and fasting on Tisha B'Av is mentioned in the Nevi'im. It's mentioned in Zechariah. So therefore, that's stronger, and therefore there might have been, therefore Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Techlifa held, there might have been more of a reason to be machmir on that. Lamaisa, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that, in fact, we're more machmir on Yom Kippur because of the problem of schita, of squeezing it out. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So now now we're going to go into, now we're going to start getting into the question of what kind of shoes are you, what kind of footwear are you allowed to wear on Yom Kippur? So the Gemara gets into it by way of an introduction. They asked Rabbi Elazar the following question. And so they asked him two questions. The second question that they asked him is going to be what kind of footwear you're allowed to wear on Yom Kippur. That's going to be at the beginning, at the bottom of the Amud. But first, they asked him a different question. Nothing to do with our sugi over here. They asked him, now usually it's like this. In order, we know that a bechor of an animal, it has to have a mum in order for you to be able to shecht it and eat it. If it doesn't have a mum, then it has to be brought as a korban. And nowadays, when you don't have a bais mikdash, then it has to be left indefinitely. And if eventually it dies, then it's also bahana. So now you need somebody with smicha ish mipiyish, the real kind, from Moshe Rabbeinu, to be able to be matir a bechor. But also he needs permission from the nasi in order to be able to do that. So they asked Rabbi Elazar, Zokin v'yoshev v'yeshiva, suppose you have an older Talmud Chacham, he's already a great Talmud Chacham, he's already sitting as a member of the yeshiva, as a member of the Sanhedrin. So now, tzorech l'tor reshus, l'hat v'chores, oy ein et tzorech. Does he need to get permission from the Nasi to be able to be matur v'chores, to look at them and say, this is definitely a mum, and this is not, oy ein et tzorech, or does he not need that kind of permission? So the Gemara asks, my comment by Lou, what exactly is the premise of the question? So the answer is Hachi comment by Lou. The question was as follows: Ki hod the amr of Idi ba'ovin, dabrze hinichu lahem lebeinasiya. They left this set. They left this covered. This that you have to get reshus. They left that covered for the house of the nasi. Kedele his gader boy, in order that the family of the nasiim have what to make themselves great with. Like they have. They have that power still by them, where they're able to say who's allowed and who's not allowed to be matir b'chores. So now the question is, tzorech l'tor reshus, because of that, should we say that even somebody who's already a respected member of the yeshiva needs to ask them reshus in order to give them that honor? Or maybe he's already a zakin, he's already yoshiv yeshiva, he's already a member of the inner group of the chachamim for a long time. Maybe he doesn't need to ask reshus from the nasi anymore in order to be matir b'chores. So Amar of Tzadik ben Chalukah al Raglav Amar. Tzadik ben Chalukah got up on his feet and said, "I can give you edus. Anido isias Rabbi Yosi ben Zimra, shazokin v'yoshev yeshiva haya. I saw Rabbi Yosi ben Zimra was a zokin v'yoshev yeshiva, but Amud b'maylam iskanish alzeh. He was in fact even greater than the grandfather of the nasi of our times." Based on other Gemaras, it seems that the Nasi of Rabbeinu Yochim explains the Nasi of our times means Rebbe, and therefore his grandfather is Rabbi Gamliel HaZokin. So he's saying that Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra is even greater than Rabbi Gamliel HaZokin, and v'notar reshus la'at b'chores. And yet he asks permission from Rebbe in order to be matar b'chores. So you see that even a Zokin, a Yoshev Yeshiva, even a person on such a great level, still needs to ask reshus. On the other hand, Amalei Rab Abba, but Rab Abba says to Rab Tzadik ben Chalukah, Loi kachol yamaisa, that's not actually what happened. He never asked Rishus, Ela kachol yamaisa. The story was as follows. Rab Yosi ben Zimra Koyen. Rab Yosi ben Zimra himself was a Koyen. So now the question is, can a Koyen be matir other people's b'chores? B'hochi, come and boy, let's say a question. Who is the halacha like? Do we say halacha could a mayor? Do we say that you have there's a machlokas about this in Masech the Bechoris. Reb Meir says, Choshed b'davar l'donev l'mi'idai, somebody who is suspect about a certain inyan in halacha cannot sit in judgment about it and cannot be an aid about it. Meaning, koinim a choshed about Bechorim. Because what happens? As long as the Bechor is a tam, before it develops a mum, you can't do anything with it. The koyin can't do anything with it. He can't shecht it. He can't eat it. Once it develops a mum, the koyin will be able to shecht it and eat it. Now the koyin therefore has a very strong incentive to say that something is a mum, or maybe even to make a mum in the animal himself in order to be able to eat it. So the mayor holds because of that, koyinim are not allowed ever to paskin on anything involving b'chodes, even if it's not their own. So is the halacha like him? And therefore, that would mean that Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra is not allowed to see, to look at a bechor and check if this is a mum. Or do a halacha of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, do a neman who ashal chaveri, veni neman ashal atzmai. Or maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says that the koyin is taka not trustworthy about his own bechor, because he might just want to shecht and eat it, but he is trustworthy about somebody else's, because there's no incentive for him in it, even if he says that the moment you're able to shecht it, the other guy is going to have the hanah from it, he won't. So that was the question. According to that, all that Rebbe did, or whoever the Nasi was in his times, is told him the halacha is like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, and therefore you, Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, are able to look at a mum of somebody else's bechor and see whether it's a mum or not. So nothing to do with the question of Tehillas Rishus. So in fact, the Tosfos Yom Kippurim says they're not arguing about the Metzius. It is definitely true that Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra went and consulted with Rebbe, but Rabbi Sadek ben Chalukah had thought that was he went to ask him permission to ask to dimata b'choris, and now and Rabbi Abba tells him he wasn't asking permission; he was just asking whether the halacha is whether he's allowed to in the first place. Okay, so that was one question they asked Rabbi Lazar. This is Rabbi Lazar the Amora, by the way. The two coming by who now they had another question, which is relevant to Yom Kippur. Mahu lotzis b'sandal shel sha'am b'yom kippurim. Are you allowed to go out on Yom Kippur wearing a sandal made out of sha'am? Now Rashi teaches that sha'am is a kind of goyma, a kind of plant that grows near the riverbanks. In English, it's called rushes. So it's like a grass or an herb or something. It's, for example, they used to in the olden days, they made papyrus, a kind of paper out of it. It was a softish material. It could hold together enough to be able to make shoes out of, but they wouldn't last very long, and they wouldn't protect your feet from the hardness and the roughness of the ground. So are you allowed to wear such shoes on Yom Kippur? And nowadays in modern Hebrew, by the way, the word sham means cork. Like what they use for wine bottles, but doesn't in the Gemara it means something else. Anyway, so are you allowed to do that? So the Omer Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmani al Raglav, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmani stood up on his feet for Omar, Anira Isias Rabbi Shurban Levi Shiyotza Basandal Shosham Yom Kippurim. Yes, I saw Rabbi Shurban Levi going out with a sandal made out of these rushes on Yom Kippur. So therefore, the answer is that you're allowed to. So he asks, Vaminale. So then Rabbi Yitzchak ben Nachmani says, I asked Rabbi Shurban Levi, the Tainus Tzibumai, what about would the same din apply on a Tainus Tzibur, where they make a fast because there's no rain or whatever, and there are certain fasts in that series when you're not allowed to wear shoes, just like on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur. And again, you might argue that Divrei Sofrim Tzrichim Chizuk, that when the Chachamim are goes of something, it needs to be stronger than the Din D'Araisa. Amalei Lo Shna, and he tells me there's no difference on public fast days, you'd also be allowed to wear sandals made out of sham. And similarly, the Gemara continues, Omer Rav Baba Chana, Anir Isias Rabbi Lazar de min Nineveh, Shiyotza Basandal Hosham Batainis Tibur. I saw Rabbi Lazar from Nineveh, the pastor of the same city of Nineveh as in the story of Yonah. So I saw him, Shiyotza Basandal Hosham Batainis Tibur, that he went out on a Tainis Tibur wearing sandals made of sham, of these rushes. So I asked him, what would be the din on Yom Kippur? Omalei Lo Shna, and again he told me there's no difference, and you're allowed to. So far, so good. You're allowed to wear a sandal made out of sham. And the Gemara gives some other examples. Rabbi Yehuda nafik b'dehitni. Rabbi Yehuda would go out on Yom Kippur wearing sandals made out of hitni, which is a kind of sham, Rashi describes, so it's a different kind of grass. Rabbi nafik Abaya nafik b'dehutzi. Abaya would make sandals out of palm leaves, out of lulav leaves, and wear those on Yom Kippur. Rabbi nafik b'divli or b'diavli. Rava would walk out on Yom Kippur wearing ones made out of grass. Rava Barav Huna, Korech Sudra Akara, even Nafik, and Rava Barav Huna would wrap a cloth around his feet and go out. So in other words, you don't have to actually be barefoot. You're allowed to, so far, what we're saying is it sounds like you're allowed to wear these kinds of soft materials like that, where you can very easily feel the roughness and the hardness of the ground through them. However, Mosiv Rami Bachama, but Rami Bachama says, so far the implication seems to be that you're allowed to wear anything as long as it's not leather. But we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, Hakiteya Yotzev Kav Shalai Divir Rameir. Rameir says that on Shabbos, an amputee, a person who's had his foot amputated, is allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing with his wooden leg, because he needs that in order to walk. Rabbi Yossi oser, whereas Rabbi Yossi says it's oser. So Rabbi Meir holds it's considered like a shoe. Rabbi Yossi holds it's not, because it's not the kind of shoe that most people wear. Tosfos discusses that we're not talking about a wooden leg that he needs in order to walk. Then how could Rabbi Yossi answer him? How's he supposed to get around on Shabbos? Rather, Tosfos says we're talking about that he doesn't actually use it to walk with at all. He uses crutches or whatever. He just has that in order that people don't realize that he's missing his foot. So then Rabbi Yossi says it's not really considered a malbush, and therefore we can't wear it on Shabbos. But the Braisa says, the Tony Allah, we learn in a Braisa on it, the Shoven Sha'asa Lotus by Yom Kippurim. Both the mayor and Rabbi Yossi agree that you're not allowed to wear this wooden shoe out on Yom Kippur. Now, it's not a shoe in Halacha, and still it's Osir. So if you're not allowed to wear a wooden shoe on Yom Kippur, then you shouldn't be allowed to wear one made out of rushes or grasses or reeds either. Amar Abaya, Abaya says, and Hossam the Ispek Sisu. No, because the difference is over there, we're talking about where it's not just a wooden leg, there's a hollow area in the top of it where you put in pads, you put in soft pads and things in order that this way, the stump of his leg rests on those pads rather than directly on the wood. And then the problem is, Mushum Tainug, so then the problem is that he's enjoying it. And the whole point is, on Yom Kippur, it's supposed to be Ta'anu Esnaf Shesecha. So you're not supposed to be wearing something that comfortable. Amalei Rava, so Rava says, what do you mean? He lav monahu. If you're telling me that to begin with, the shoe is not considered a keli, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, you're not allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur. So what, sisin meshaved lemona? Would you say that just because you put some rags inside it, that all of a sudden makes it a keli? And that should make the difference that only then you're not allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur, but without that, you would be allowed to. What's the logic? Also, anyway, is it also when we say that on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed, it doesn't mean you're not allowed any kind of tainug on Yom Kippur. You're not allowed the various ones that it said in the mission. You're allowed to have other kinds of tainugim. Didn't we just say before that Rabbi Bar Avuna would wrap cloth around his feet and walk like that on Yom Kippur, even though he's not walking barefoot? He's not completely feeling the hardness and the roughness of the ground. So you see, it's not so bad if he has some enjoyment. So what would be wrong if you say that this amputee is going to wear a wooden leg that has pads inside it? Why would there be a problem? But Oidman Katoni Sefer also, Robert says, since the next part of the Mishnah continues, im yeshle beis kibuk sisin tomei, that if this wooden leg has a hollow area in the top of it for rags, for pieces of cloth, then it's makabel tumah. And the reason is because without that, it's a pshute kleyetz. Without that, it's a flat wooden keli. So even though Rashi explains in Shabbos that even though he does put the stump of his leg inside it, that's not considered to be a kli kibul, because he doesn't carry his leg with the wooden leg. It's just the opposite. He moves his leg, and the wooden leg goes along with it. But if it has a space in the top, an empty space in the top in which he can put cloth, pieces of cloth and rags and whatever to cushion it, then already it's a kli kibul. Now it's a wooden keli that contains something, and therefore it's makabel tumah. The point is, only then does the Mishnah talk about where it contains those. Miklal, the Reisha, Labida is like Sisinaskinim. So obviously the Reisha is talking about a plain wooden leg where it doesn't have Sisin in it, and yet Rabbi Yossi is telling us you're not allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur. So it can't just be because of the Sisin. It must be that there's a problem with the wooden shoe itself. So if there's a problem with a wooden shoe, then why are you allowed to wear shoes made out of sham or those various other materials that we said before, where sham, after all, is a plant also? Ella, I'm a rubber, look, oil them to cool out a minolu. So rubber says no. Everybody agrees that a wooden shoe is considered a shoe as far as halacha over hal pligi, over Shabbos behal pligi. So when it comes to Shabbos, the machloek is as follows. Mar sabag azrin and jomim shtamet v'osi la'asuyeh. Rabbi Yossi says you can't wear it on Shabbos because it might fall off in the street, and then you're going to end up carrying it for Amos. Omar Sova, like Gazrinin, whereas Rabbi Meir says we're not gozer on that, therefore he allows you to wear it. But on Yom Kippur, both of them would ask you to wear it because it is considered a shoe in Halacha. Now, it comes out then, according to Rashi, that we're saying then that you're not allowed to wear wooden shoes on Yom Kippur. You would be allowed maybe to wear shoes made out of sham or gemi or the other things, sham or hitni or whatever that we said before, all those various kinds of rushes and reeds and things like that. You would be allowed to, but not wood. The Balamor says even more so. The Balamor says all of them would be osir. This that we said, that some of the Chachamim went out with them, we're talking about they were istinissim. They were delicate people. They couldn't walk barefoot, and therefore they have to wear something on their feet, so they would wear those. What?
That's why wood is not allowed?
So according to Rashi, wood is not allowed. According to the Baal HaMor, neither is rushes or reeds or grasses or any of those kinds of things. On the other hand, according to the Rif and the Rambam, yes, we're saying over here that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi agree that it's considered a shoe. But then we have other Chachamim that disagree with them and say it's not considered a shoe, and that's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, is any kind of shoe not made out of wood, not made out of leather, is mutter. If it has leather in it, even if it's wood and covered with leather, then it's also, but anything, even though, so on the face of it, the reason why you're not supposed to be wearing leather shoes, again, is so you feel the hardness of the ground, and if you're wearing wooden shoes, let's say, you're not going to feel the hardness of the ground, nevertheless, they say it doesn't matter. The fact is, it's not considered a min'ol, it's not considered a shoe in halacha, and the issue is only to wear a shoe, meaning leather, on Yom Kippur. So therefore, you'd be allowed to wear wood, you'd be allowed to, nowadays, you could wear sneakers, you could wear Crocs or whatever. There are some poskim who paskin, like Rashi and the Baal HaMor, and say that maybe you shouldn't be wearing such comfortable shoes, like Crocs or like Crocs or sneakers or whatever, but the majority opinion among poskim is that not, that you're allowed to wear all those. The only thing you're not allowed to wear is if it contains leather. We'll stop over here and we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Okay, everyone.